Welcome everybody to, I think it's the second to last talk in this track. Next to last. There will be one more. My name is Volker Lindeke, as you can read here. I'm from Göttingen. You've seen me walk around the last couple of days. I'm going to talk about some of the 3.2 infrastructure changes that I have made to what has happened between 3.28 or much rather 3.25 and what becomes 3.2 now. So one warning, if you are not going to ever touch Samba 3 code, this might be a bit boring for you. So your last chance to leave. I will talk about the C structures, C level, whatever memory structures inside. So this is mainly really a developer talk for those who might ever contribute to Samba 3.2. Two slides advertising. Okay, one slide advertising. Yesterday morning I made a diff between what is about to be 3.28b and current 3.2. This is what the dot dot there says. We have 429,000 insertions between those and almost 200,000 deletions. We changed a lot of code. Given that we covariate counts as 380,000 or something between 350 and 450,000 lines of code. So we almost changed everything. Many of these insertions are from automatic generated code by Piddle, which we check in, contrary to what Samba 4 does. So a lot is happening there. But still, a lot of infrastructure has changed. Something has happened. The old inbuf-outbuf system is gone. This is mainly something that was driven by the demand to reduce memory footprint. Then we migrated almost all the RPC servers to what Samba also does, auto-generated code. This is something we should have done 10 years ago. Now we finally got there. I mean, 15 years ago, essentially. We put in the cluster patches. I will describe what was necessary to prepare those. So little internal APIs that everybody needs to use now who is contributing to Samba. Be aware that the cluster patches most likely will not be in fully functional and tested state in 3.2.0, but the infrastructure is in and it won't go away. So very soon after that, you will have a working cluster implementation of Samba using CTDB. I added an in-memory cache and some Talog magic that has turned out to be very useful. Okay, inbuf-outbuf. I think that's part of the oldest code that ever went into Samba. How did the SMB request handling work on 3.0? We had this, for example, one of the most simple requests API protocol-wise is the reply close request that just takes a file descriptor, closes the file that is attached to this file descriptor, and that's it. No data to be returned, no data beyond that. That's the write time, I think, that comes with the close, but it's really simple. We have the central processing loop that calls out to these reply underscore something, reply open, reply close, reply read, reply write, and so on. And in 3.0, what these functions take is a parameter connection struct, which represents the tree ID. We have some problems there that we don't have the right abstractions in there. What Samba 4 is one step better here. This represents both the tree ID and also the session setup, meaning the user credentials hang off this, and we need to separate those at some point. This is not done yet. The two ones that are the killers are inbuf and outbuf. These are statically allocated buffers of 128K plus some safety margin. I think it was 133K something that was allocated at startup of SMBD, and it was never freed, and it was used for every SMB request. The API went like this. So you go into reply close, and the initial idea was that reply close should return the number of bytes that it wanted the central processing loop calling reply close to ship to the client. Worked well until somebody found out that we have to have op-lock delays and so on. So we had to clutch something into this to say, okay, reply close doesn't return anything to the client but returns something later. Async IO, for example, is one example. Then the open call, all the open calls do this. Right now, I think that's about it. Oh, the timed byte range logs also. So we have an infrastructure to delay calls, which is kind of arbitrary or whatever, that we return minus one as a size. Okay, don't bother with sending anything back. The problem here is, I mean, we basically 256K, 260K per SMBD is wasted. It's allocated, it's taken from the base operating system. It's, I mean, normally only whatever, at most 64K is used overall, but in the normal processing case, whatever 10K is used, something. But the 256K, it doesn't look like very much, but if you have a server that has 5,000 SMB clients, multiply that, that counts up. So this needed to go. Reply close in 302 now looks a bit different. This is an idea that I stole essentially from Samba 4, or I mean, it's kind of obvious, but what we do is, when we get the request from the client, we partially parse it. So we parse out the SMB header, and we create a structure, struct SMB request. And by the way, if you've listened to Jeremy's talk, this is where one of the mallocs that now hurt us come from. So we malloc SMB request. We have mallocked the inbuf to exactly, or we have mallocked exactly the number of bytes that were given to us by the client. So this hangs off inbuf. And then outbuf is, I think, initialized to null or even uninitialized. It must be initialized to null. So what happens is that reply close is called. Reply close does its job. And if it wants the central processing loop to send something back, it fills in outbuf. Returns. Processing loop looks here, okay. The nice thing is we don't need these size requests that you have seen on the previous slide, because, I mean, inbuf and outbuf, they are self-contained. They carry their own size in the SMB, in the NetGuiers header, essentially. So they carry their own size. You fill in, reply clause should fill in that if that returns as null. Nothing happens. It's then some event loop callbacks task to actually send it back on its own. Okay, yeah. Inbuf outbuf carry their sizes themselves. And what we also have, SMB request, and this is also, I mean, the obvious thing to do, it's a potential talloc parent. And anybody of you ever used talloc in C code? Jeremy, you have, but okay. Talloc is a hierarchical memory management system that we are using really pervasively everywhere. Talloc is everywhere these days. And what you have a talloc context. You can attach memory to that talloc context. And when you free the parent, the child is freed as well. So no, I mean, that really makes it easier to avoid memory leaks. If you ever always, I mean, it's a difficult choice sometimes to find the right talloc parent to attach to have the right lifetime for your data. But this is data that lives for exactly the time the SMB request lives. So you can attach anything to that, it will go away after whatever you're done, after reply close returns. So that contributed to most of the memory reduction, and I mean, that it was kind of difficult because here, two slides back, we had to go through all the 70-something SMB requests to really make sure that they don't overwrite memory, that they don't read beyond the memory they got. Because, I mean, the assumption that we have 130K, that whatever, was everywhere. And we needed to remove that assumption call by call by call. And this, I really tried to find a strategy to make that work. But I converted all the calls individually, and I needed to find some way to make both APIs work at the same time, so that after every single check, and we could have released in theory, but I got so far that we actually removed all of those. So, next basic change. You probably have seen quite a few talks about Samba 4 infrastructure. So, and what they have a DCRPC runtime system, which is really elaborate, which is not what you get from freedce.org or from OSF, but it's really an advanced runtime system for RPC. And one thing that, as I said, we should have done ages ago, we should have auto-generated the RPC marshalling code, and we should have auto-generated the RPC marshalling code both server-side and client-side. What we have done is we imported the basic infrastructure, and what happened was in San Jose in 2006, sometime September or so, that we made the first attempt that we converted pipes overall. So workstation service, whatever. The smaller pipes could be converted in one lump with the basic infrastructure around. But I mean, for the big ones, LSA, SAMR, and Logdocon, this just doesn't work. In particular, for example, if you look at printing 77 calls, what was it? This was dozens of calls. You can't convert them all in one run. What you have to do, you have to do the infrastructure to go in and not convert per pipe, but per call. And this is what I try to do. And I could convert LSA close, also a very simple call. And I know for sure that this was done in October 2006, because I put in a bug in October 2006 that I just recently found. So I mean, this should tell you something that we need to release now. I mean, that's code that has been put in more than whatever, almost 2 years now, 1.5 years ago. We want this out. And Günther then went in and did really the grunt work, converting all the calls, call by call by call. I mean, if you have followed Samba CVS check-in, make EDL, and so on, all over the place over the last few weeks. Anybody volunteer for Spool SS? That's the last one. Yeah, at some point we will, but that's the one that nobody right now is willing to touch or even dares to touch.
We should make permission to do it. He did the Microsoft implementation.
Yes. Yes. Although this morning he claimed that he had only designed less than 30 of those 77 calls, so something has happened after he left. But
Jerry was saying it was like more like 33.
Whatever. Whatever. Look at the ADL. It's out there now. Look at MSDN. Okay, clustered Samba. Samba 4 started out because Samba was not seen to be ever clusterable. So the infrastructure when Samba 4 started, the infrastructure in Samba 3 was really, really bad. My favorite one that I finally managed to remove at some time, I think it was towards 3.22 or something, quite a while ago, is this receive next SMB call, which was in there from the first or even the second OPLOC implementation. That did the following. So we didn't really have a central processing loop, but from within some of these SMB codes that we implement, we called back into, okay, get me the next request. And we only expected, or we only could handle a very limited number of requests from within this inner processing loop, which was bad. I mean, really, really bad. And we actually hit bugs, in particular, for example, with OS2 with that, because OS2 with its multi-threaded environment does weird things to us. And this had to go at some point. And this was the first step to rewrite the OPLOC implementation to get rid of that. Samba has don't know if it's unfair, but we discussed that many times, in particular with Roger Binns. It It has an architecture that really maps very well to clusters, because from the beginning, and I doubt for production systems this will, I think this won't change in the near future, per client, per TCP connection, we have a separate process. This means we have to have very clearly defined interfaces between those SMBD processes to talk to each other, for example, for share modes, for op logs, for timed byte branch logs, for everything, for communication. And what we had to do to get this clustered is to cut the SMBD at the right level so that exactly whatever, where the communication happened, we needed to make that cluster aware. One critical part was the messaging. Okay, SMBD for client A must be able to send a message. Okay, retry this open. I've given up the op log. Retry this open. It must be able to send this message to any other SMBD that takes part in the same SMB semantic space, I would say. Normally, it's only a single host with shared memory. That's fast. On a cluster, it's not quite as fast, but it needed doing. So the first point, these are not really connected. First look at the first point, the messaging between that I talked about that needed to be just rewritten to allow multiple backends. Messaging is simple. You go in and either you just kick a process locally with a signal, or you send a UDP packet, or you send something. That's conceptually quite simple. You just have to agree on a mechanism how to ping another process somewhere. And it already was quite well defined in the Samba 3 code. We had a messaging.c file that had an API that wasn't really difficult to rewrite. More difficult was, okay, all these little databases that we have, all this TDB subsystem. So we have TDB open, get me the share mode database. TDB fetch, okay, I want the share mode record for this particular file. TDB store, TDB traverse, all over the place. And this doesn't really match to a cluster implementation. So step two to get the cluster running was I abstracted away, essentially, I mean, this is a slide for Jeremy as well. I did an object-oriented thing that should have been done in C++. So I looked at the TDB API and said, okay, what do we really need? And what I did is I created a little DB context structure that contains function pointers, the classical thing that GTK, for example, would do to fake object orientation in C without having C++ around. And what we do is, instead of TDB open, you go in and you say DB open, you get a struct DB context back that contains the specific pointers that call out to the function that implement your message, your TDB abstractions. The central one here is fetch locked, because when looking at what SMBD really did, I figured out, okay, whenever we store something in the critical code path, like byte range locking, like the OpenDB, like the locking.tdb, we always do it under a lock. So we lock a record, we mess with it, and we store it under the lock, we unlock it. And this is where Talloc also comes in. So what this fetch locked record, this fetch locked callback does is the following. You give it a key, somewhere here we also have a memory context as a parent, but the central one is you give it a key, and it goes into the database, it does two things. It locks the record, and it gives you this structure here that represents both the lock and the contents. And what you see here, we have struct DB record. They have the key, they have the value, and you have a couple of other function pointers. So what can you do with this record now? One of three things. First, just talloc freed, so drop the lock, nothing has happened. You can store a new value there, you give it the record, you give it new data and the typical TDB flags, and you can delete the record. So you have to acquire the record to be able to delete it, but this is what happened anyway in SMBD. Okay, Do I have a second slide about this?
No.
The initial ones that I converted to this API were locking.tdb, bifrenchlock.tdb, and I think connections.tdb, some internal databases. And we found out that we need to really convert all of them to make it production ready. And these days, all internal TDBs, almost all, are rewritten to use this fake C++ DB record thing. And Trish told me that when we make this asynchronous, he's gonna adopt it for Samba 4 as well. So what we now have is we can go in and say, okay, DB open CTDB. One single spot when you open the locking.tdb, you just choose whether you have a local TDB file or the clustered version. Certainly the function pointers change, they do different things, but everything is hidden behind this API. So everybody who invents a new database in Samba should use this API and automatically it is gonna be cluster aware. I told you this is gonna be C code. So, another one, another pet project of mine, get rid of statics and get rid of global variables. And what I found out is that a huge class of global variables in SMBD is these little silly caches. The one that is not silly and which is not small is the stat cache. The stat cache essentially is the one that avoids us having to do a read dir when somebody tries to open a file that doesn't exist or tries to create a file that doesn't exist. We have to do a read dir because we have to make sure that when somebody opens a file exclusively, we have to make sure that it doesn't exist in another capital lowercase variant. Because, I mean, that's the basic one that translates between the case insensitivity of Windows and the case sensitivity of the file system down below. So this is definitely needed. It's a cache. But what we then have, for example, sit2uid. That's a cache that was added because when somebody goes in and retrieves security descriptors on files, what you see is what we have on the file system is UIDs and group IDs. The client wants to see SIDs. So we go in and we have to translate UIDs to SIDs. Normally in a domain member environment, this forks us to WinBind. And if you do thousands of them, that can become slow. So we had a static cache that cached the last 100 GIDs, group IDs, and the last 100 UIDs mappings. I mean, that's just silly to have a static cache that does this for 100. I mean, any cache size that you choose is whatever, wrong in some situations. Get current working directory, get pwnum, name it, tons of little caches. Most of these caches are done via static variables, were done via static variables. I replaced these static variables with one central one. One of the main problems here is we don't have a cache expiry. Once something enters the cache, we always get it from there. No good. First, it consumes memory. Second, most of these caches didn't check whether the cache is still valid. Okay, my new cache doesn't do that either, but but still, I mean, bad design. What I put in is a little abstraction that consolidates all these uses. So we have a struct memcache. That's an opaque struct. What you do, you give it a memcontext as a parent. That's the parent. That's the talloc parent. And what you can give it is a maximum size. That's kilobytes, I think. Yeah, kilobytes. It's directly modeled after the max stat cache size parameter. So that goes directly in there. And I think that's kilobytes. We have one per SMBD. We have one global of these. And what we do is we do a memcache add. And this gets a key, like for example a UID, and a value which would be the SID, so that this enters the cache. Because there were so many of these little caches, I went in and invented this enumeration. I didn't want to have one of these memcache structures per cache type. I wanted this global, so that I get a global overall maximum size of all caches internally. I mean, a cache is really what it says, When the data is not there, you are always able to retrieve it from somewhere else. So it doesn't hurt if it goes away. It might be a bit slower, but it doesn't really hurt functionally. So what I did is, okay, I have separate memcache types. One is the stat cache, one is UAD2SID cache, and so on. A list of those, whenever you invent a new cache, add a separate key to this memcache type, and you're done. So we have this overall cache now that does not grow beyond maximum size. It has a least recently used cleanup scheme, which in particular the stat cache did not have. So the stat cache, which is really important, grew to a certain point. I think before 3 or 26 or something, it grew indefinitely because the default max stat cache size was 0. No good. We changed that to a megabyte. But when it grew beyond that point, we threw all away, because we didn't have any least recent use information. This is now hidden behind this interface memcache add memcache lookup. And what I also did, we used to have these caches partly in internal TDBs. I see this as not really brilliant design, because TDB internally has also some memory handling, which we need to do on disk, but which is kind of silly to do in memory, because other people have, well, better or worse malloc implementations that do exactly that we also did in TDB. So I got rid of that, and what I did is I stole the Linux Red Black Tree implementation. That's really a brilliant piece of code. Look at that. I haven't seen any, whatever, so dense code that is so well done. So, and it was, I could copy it, just copy and paste it into our code. Some little tweaks and it just worked. So that's internal. By the way, this also contributes to this system malloc load, but it has to, because it reduces load from the TDB internal malloc. The load has to go somewhere. Next one. In my hunt for static variables, I came across SID string static. What does that do? This is pervasively used in debug statements. Okay, I want to convert this security identifier to a name. What do you do? Debug, 0, comma, and then okay, percent %s, you get it as SID, and you need to convert it to a string. We had the very extremely handy function SID string static that took a SID, it had a local static F string. Hey, we removed an F string. It's still there, by the way. So it had a static F string, and so it converted it, it returned the static F string, but there are obvious problems. First, it's a static, which is bad as such. But if you, for example, had two SIDs in the same debug statement, the same SID string static call in the same debug statement overwrote the first, which actually happened in some debug statements. Very confusing when you expect two different SIDs to show up in a debug statement when they are always the same. And you really scratch your head and what's going on here? And this has happened. It's just too handy. The alternative would have been SID string TELOG. We have a SID string TELOG. As I said, TELOG is the hierarchical memory system that we have, the hierarchical malloc system that we have. So we could always allocate this SID, and we could go in and say, okay, do a temporary malloc context everywhere, but this is also, we would have to pass a lot of TELOG context around, which becomes unhandy. And also these temporary TELOG contexts need to be freed. Not very nice. So what I did, I it took a while to get there, 10 minutes to go, okay. I think that's 3 or 4 slides left. So it took a while to see, okay, we have a hierarchy of temporary TELOG contexts. And we pass temporary TELOG contexts around everywhere. And why just not do this implicitly? Again, I replaced a ton of static variables with one static variable. And this is the so-called TELOG stack frame. So what do we have? I think I can show this with code. Telox stack. Can anybody read that? So that's simple. We have two functions. And when you enter a function that allocates considerable amount of memory internally within this function that you wanted to free before you return, what you do is you go in and you call telloc stack frame, which gives you a normal telloc context that you can just attach stuff to. So from this point of view, it's not really a new thing. What happens though is this telloc stack frame is, yeah, it's the top of stack, which you can get it with this function telloc TOS, top of stack. So you allocate your telloc stack frame, you do your debug statement, and what you can then do is you can say sit string telloc and just call telloc TOS. That's an implicit temporary telloc context that's everywhere. Just call telloc TOS and you get a temporary telloc context, which you will not really know. I mean, across a function call, it will help, it will remain, it will stay there, but once you leave a function call, you never know when the memory goes. But for this particular application, like debug statements, is exactly what you would want. There are two advantages to this. First, if you don't bother with too much memory, don't bother with a separate telloc stack frame, there's always a telloc stack frame around for each SMB request that is freed when that is done, that SMB request. And the other one, if you happen to forget to free a telloc stack frame, with normal temporary telloc context, you have created a memory leak. This telloc stack frame is so smart, so you have a high-level function that calls telloc stack frame. You have a low-level function that also calls telloc stack frame. In some weird error condition, you forget to free the lower-level one. When the upper-level one goes, because we have a stack, the lower-level one is also gone away. So it's kind of robust. The more users of this are around, the more whatever precise the memory allocation and memory freeing is. But I mean, if you don't really care, allocate a telloc stack frame. It's a bug, but it's not a severe bug. You have not created a permanent memory leak, because eventually it will go away. Okay, anything new here? So the stack frame is a normal telloc context that must be freed with telloc free. You can attach anything to it. Nested telloc stack frames calls are robust. If you forget to telloc free the inner one, the outer one, freeing the outer one also takes care of the inner one. Okay, telloc TOS refers to the current topmost. So the pattern is, if you have a function that allocates a lot of memory, use a temporary stack frame, use telloc TOS in between, and whatever, telloc freed then at the end of the function. Okay, we had a problem. So, nice structure, we got rid of P strings, we are on our way to get rid of F strings, and so this turns out to be a problem because 3.2 turned out to be really much slower than 3.0. And the top user in CPU, which Cache Grind happily showed to me, was malloc. Yeah, having no static buffers is nice, but you have to pay the price for malloc, because everything individually allocated. So OpenLDAP, I mean, just watch the OpenLDAP discussions. They have a much bigger problem because they are multi-threaded, and mallocs typically in a multi-thread case are much slower than, but we always had the idea that malloc essentially would be free if not cheap, cheap if not free, without threads. Okay, not so. Our telloc abstraction provides a memory hierarchy. And when looking, when really doing measurements, how many malloc calls we did, I mean, Sometimes it's just silly. The most silly user of malloc is our spnego code or our ASN1 library. That's just silly. For every single byte that we add to an ASN1 buffer, we do a realloc. Wait a second. But that's the way it is. So we had to find a way around this without touching really inner code. Took a while. Telloc pools. What's the normal use pattern? 5 minutes. What's the normal use pattern for SMBD, memory use pattern? So we get, we have a nice situation. We are essentially request response. Very few memory structures need to be kept around for more than one request. File handles come to mind. Any state that is associated with asynchronous request, but that's not the norm. The normal memory allocation goes away when the SMBD when the SMB request is done. So per SMB request we do stuff. The telloc memory just goes away immediately. And what we do now is we create the structure called telloc pool, which again, like the telloc TRS, is a perfectly normal telloc context that you can use exactly like the normal telloc context. You can attach stuff to it, and when you telloc free the parent pool, everything that you attach to it goes away. But this is with a little difference. So you say, I create a telloc pool. And what we do is, we create a telloc pool for each SMB request of size 8192, 8K, which turned out to be good average use for whatever we use for one SMB request. And so you call telloc pool, and you don't reuse that memory. You just use this 8K large chunk as a parent for other requests and for other telloc calls. You don't ever use this memory as such. What happens then is you call a second telloc that has this as a telloc parent. And what happens is we just increment a little pointer within this telloc pool. Somebody then goes in and calls telloc free on the child. We just ignore that free. We don't put it back. We just ignore it. So it's really, because that's throwaway memory. And we know that, okay, with 8K, 99.9% of all SMB requests are happy with that. So we just allocate from, we just increment one pointer. And if somebody calls telloc free, we don't really free it, because we know at the end of the SMB request, somebody will call telloc free on the pool itself. And this then removes away those 8K that we allocated in one chunk. This really, now the top user is telloc free. The top CPU user is telloc free. We have to do something about that. But we completely removed malloc out of the picture for some profiling, for any profiling. So,
quick question.
Yeah.
In the end, what did you see? What was the improvement you saw?
The question was, what was the concrete improvement? When looking at the number of CPU cycles that we spent when looking at cache grind, it was for a complete NetBench run, it came down from 12 billion or trillion or something, 12 at the first two digits, to 8. So this means, 25% less CPU. And yeah, that got us to the same level that Samba 3.0 did, with the improved internal structure. Very quick overview. This is not done yet. I have some patches for this. I added this slide because Fritsch has taken. Oh, we decided that Fritsch would better talk about clustered Samba than me about external name pipe handlers, which is also a very deep developer oriented topic. So what we have is, we have a DCE RPC server infrastructure. All the whatever domain controller stuff is all DCE RPC. The problem is, I think the Samba team is pretty good at doing file services, doing basic core infrastructure. What we are not good at is writing tons of RPC servers. The problem there is, all RPC servers need to be embedded, they need to be linked into SMBD. They are a part of SMBD. And this, I don't think that in the long run this will really fly, and this is not expandable, that doesn't scale. So I looked at Samba 4, although the story was a bit different, but I figured out that Samba 4 can proxy RPC traffic to some external daemon. So you get the RPC bind, you open the LANMAN pipe, whatever way the request comes in, we proxy the RPC request to some whatever local Unix domain sucker, to some external TCP, to some external main pipe. They use it mainly for debugging, but this gives you the idea that there's ways that we could become a DC-RPC infrastructure. So the idea is that we convert LANMAN named pipes to just be a transport. We connect to Unix domain sockets and have somebody listen there. In particular, for example, when you look at the Microsoft docs, they have this remote indexing. That's a named pipe that we will never want. I mean, we don't want to open doc files inside SMBD and look at the contents. I mean, a doc file parser in the kernel, I mean, essentially SMBD becomes a kernel at this point. No way. So this needs to be an external daemon. So somebody opens this named pipe that whatever does some remote indexing stuff that we don't want to look at because it's a mess. That's one way. So, and this code is essentially done. It's not checked in yet. And this will not go into a 3.2.0, but very soon after that, I would guess. The second one is I want to expand this to the RPC interface level so that SMBD does all the security sensitive stuff like encryption, like signing, like the bind, like authentication, and the RPC server down there doesn't have to take care of this. So if the RPC server somewhere on a Unix domain socket wanted to do the authentication itself, it would need access to all secrets.tdb, to all keytap, to all that security sensitive stuff. And I think I have a plan that I would have talked about in a little more detail to make us a DC-RPC infrastructure and a very simple to be infrastructure for others to plug in RPC services very, very easily. And I hope that that's going to be something on my list very soon. Okay, that's about it. Any questions? Boring talk, no questions. Okay, then thanks for your attention.